Just a quick word from our sponsor before we jump into today's episode. Optimizing your internal processes can often be a huge unlock for streamlining revenue and getting you and your team, if you have one, out of a manual process. If you're looking to reduce costs and headaches in one fell swoop, consider graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. It's the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere, and you cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all of your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Everything seems to be more expensive these days, so proven ways to cut costs and boost performance at the same time, like NetSuite, are kind of a no-brainer. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/SPI. netsuite.com/SPI. Once again, netsuite.com/SPI. And now a quick word from our sponsor before we start the show. Ready to earn sustainable income while creating the work you're passionate about? Get started with Memberful. Whether you teach online courses, host a podcast, run a blog, or write a newsletter, Memberful has all the tools you need to unlock revenue and deeply connect with your audience through subscription membership. Their platform allows you to easily gate content, communicate with your audience, and tier membership access directly on your own website. Plus, with Memberful, there's no need to change your workflow. They work seamlessly and integrate with the tools you already use, including MailChimp, Discord, Zapier, ConvertKit, Google Analytics, and more. Utilize their powerful built-in features and dashboards and watch your business grow. The best part? Memberful gives you full control and ownership of your audience, your brand, and your business. Get started for free at memberful.com/SPI. One more time, that's memberful.com/SPI. This is the Smart Passive Income Podcast with Pat Flynn, session number 259. Let's rock and roll.
Welcome to the Smart Passive Income Podcast, where it's all about working hard now so you can sit back and reap the benefits later. And now your host, he'll always be there to give you a pat on the back, Pat Flynn.
Our sponsor today is Uplift Desk, creators of office furniture designed to help you work better and live healthier. If you're like most entrepreneurs, you probably spend a lot of time sitting. Well, a standing desk can make a huge difference. It's actually a complete game changer. If you haven't tried one before, this offer from Uplift is for you. Plus, you can support the show at the same time. Visit UpliftDesk.com/SPI for 5% off your order. Over a million customers have chosen Uplift Desk. Innovative product designs, reasonable pricing, same-day shipping, free accessories with every desk. You can see why they're such a big hit. Standing while I work helps me get the creative juices flowing, helps me focus and stay productive, and I'm way more alert when I'm standing. And Uplift is a great deal. An industry-leading 15-year warranty, free shipping, free return shipping if you need to do that. And they provide a state-of-the-art experience. They're stable, made of very solid materials, and there are over 100 desktop choices and customizations available. Go to upliftdesk.com/SPI for 5% off your order. That's UPLIFT desk.com/SPI to get 5% off your entire order. Hey, what's up, everybody? Pat Flynn here, and thank you so much for joining me in this session of the Smart Passive Income Podcast. I'm excited because we're going to be talking about video today, specifically YouTube, and how to crush it with YouTube, how to get started, all the little tips and tricks you might need to know in order to succeed as a vlogger, somebody who is using YouTube for any means of not only just producing content, but obviously building a following and getting exposure, getting more traffic to your website, selling products, advertising, generating an income, all those kinds of things. And to help us with this topic, I first wanted to thank Matt over at NomadicMatt.com. He's not who I'm interviewing today, but it's because of him I have these two amazing guests on the show today. So Matt, he's a travel blogger, somebody who I've known for quite a while now. He's actually helped me out quite a bit. He's helped me save so much money on a recent trip to the Philippines to visit my friend Chris Ducker for his event Tropical Think Tank. And I was actually able to fly to and back from the Philippines for free because of some of Matt's tips. That's NomadicMatt.com. He introduced me to these two women who are on the show today. He was like, Pat, you haven't done an episode on YouTube. Things are changing now. You've got to get these two women on the show to help introduce YouTube to your audience in a way that's going to work today.
So I'm very happy to introduce Kristen Serra from Hopscotch the Globe, which is an awesome name, and also Nadine Sakura from HeyNadine.com. Two super knowledgeable women who are going to help us through the ins and outs of YouTube. We're actually going to be essentially building your YouTube channel together here. I ask questions as if we are building it from scratch. It's going to be a lot of fun. Let's not wait any further. Here we go. This is Kristen and Nadine here to help us with YouTube and video. Let's do this. Hey, what's up, everybody? Pat Flynn here. So happy to have two guests on the show with me today. We have Nadine and Kristen, who are two travel experts who have come together to create an amazing course. We're going to talk all about how they kind of came together, but also how they individually have each grown their websites and YouTube channels really is their main platform. So Nadine and Kristen, welcome to the Smart Passive Income Podcast. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Pat.
Yeah, this is going to be a lot of fun. You know, our good friend Matt from nomadicmatt.com connected us, and he just couldn't stop talking about how awesome you guys were. And actually, I didn't quite answer right away, and he kept asking me, like, come on, man, you got to interview these two girls because they're so fantastic. And I'm so glad that we're finally connecting today. So let me first start by having you each individually introduce yourselves to the audience and what it is that you do. So Nadine, let's start with you. What is your website and kind of how did you get started with it?
All right. So my name is Nadine Sakura. My website is Hey Nadine, as in like, hi, Nadine, but it's Hey Nadine. I am a travel videographer, travel vlogger slash blogger. And I started with YouTube. So I started with YouTube videos, just funny skits. And then that progressed into travel as I started traveling. And so that's what I do full time. That's my job. It's my career. It's my life's passion.
That's
and
awesome.
That's kind of what I do.
Yeah. When did you start kind of getting into the YouTube scene?
So I started YouTube back in 2007. So oh, wow. Way back when YouTube was just this funny little platform. It actually was bought by Google by then, but it was a whole other like wild, wild west, a creative outlet for people that were looking to express themselves in video form. And I found a voice there. I found a passion in just creating these videos. And as I started traveling in 2010, I started making travel videos and vlogs and sharing my experiences and all the amazing places around the world that I was visiting. And that progressed into my business and what I do now.
That's so cool. Let me ask you a quick question before we move on. You know, that was 2007. We're almost in 10 years after that.
Yeah.
Is it still possible for people to become successful on YouTube or using YouTube as their primary platform?
Oh, 100%. There are people coming up that can hit like a million subscribers, 100,000 subscribers in less than 6 months. It's so unpredictable,
what?
The platform. But then, yeah, it's true. I know friends that have done this. There are certain things that you can do. One part of it is luck. Another part of it is skill and kind of knowing the algorithm and knowing you and what you want to accomplish and creating good content. So there's like a couple different things involved with that, but 100%, there is tons of room for new people and new niches. They're popping up all the time because new audiences are still finding YouTube. So it's a wonderful time to get on the platform. Even if it does seem like it's a bit crowded, there's still tons of space to find your voice.
All right. Awesome. Well, I started my YouTube channel in 2009 and I don't have a million subscribers, let alone 100,000 subscribers. So I'm going to be asking you both a lot of questions on how we can sort of jumpstart our YouTube channels, because I know there's a lot of people looking to get started. Kristen, let's move over to you. What is your website and how did you get started with what you do?
So my website is hopscotchtheglobe.com, and I started off blogging, actually, just over 6 years ago. I was about to leave on a 10-month trip around the world, and I started the blog just as a way to stay in contact and share my experiences with my friends and my family. And then I started getting emails from people who I never met before, asking me advice about travel, telling me I had inspired them. At the time, I quit my job and decided to travel. So other people were emailing me saying, oh, I just quit my job. I saw that you did it and I'm going to travel too. And I was like, this is really cool, a way to connect with all these amazing people around the world. So I kept doing it. I kept at it, kept creating content. And I also went to school for film production. So I decided, and I was acting all my life. So I decided, why not start YouTube and combine all of my passions? So I started YouTube about 4 years ago. And I went full time 3 years ago, which was a big step for me because financially I was not ready to do it. But mentally I was like, if I don't do this now, there's no better time. And thank goodness I did, because I have never been happier and more successful financially and just personally.
That's awesome. Well, congratulations to you both. And Kristen, I want to keep talking about something that you'd mentioned, that, and that was that you went to film school. And I think this is another thing, another barrier that people have when they get into YouTube. It's like, you know, I'm not good on camera. I don't have the skills to do that. Can you just like break that myth really quick for us, really quick? Do you need the sort of film schooling background in order to succeed on YouTube?
You do not. I have many friends who have, Nadine didn't go to film school, but I have other friends too who didn't. And they are some of the best videographers, their videos are just visually mind-blowing, and they never went to film school, but they had a passion in it. They did their own studies by themselves online, watching YouTube, taking online courses, and they just got good at it because they were passionate about it. And after I graduated from film school, I was actually really nervous to be myself in front of the camera. I could act like another character, no problem, but I was so scared to be myself. So I had to learn by myself how to be an online in front of the camera personality or even host. So that wasn't something that I learned.
How did you learn to do that?
Practice.
Yeah.
just keep doing it and just practice, watching other people that I admire, watching TV and other hosts, other YouTubers, and just keep at it. Practice, honestly, that's it.
Awesome.
Yeah, I think it speaks to the platform itself. The beautiful thing about YouTube is that it's very raw, it's very organic, and you don't need to be perfected. Like if you were in a different medium, like television or film, everything is so perfected. There's crews, there is a lot of stuff that goes behind the scenes to make things seem natural. But on YouTube, you can just set up a camera and talk. And I mean, getting used to being in front of the camera is something for everybody. It just takes practice. And the first couple of videos that anyone does, especially in front of the camera, is going to be really weird. You're going to sound weird. You're going to be like, wow, my face does that? I didn't even know.
Story. You can look back at both of our first videos and, oh my gosh, it's just like, what were we thinking?
But it's a practice takes perfect. Like you watch people that inspire you. And like Kristen was saying, there's tons of online resources nowadays that you can kind of learn little bits here and there and bring it into your own skill set and your own kind of creative vision and what you want to create. So
awesome. You know, I know a lot of people who have started YouTube channels, myself included, and we kind of don't go into it with a real plan. We're kind of just like, okay, everybody's doing YouTube, we got to do it. So I'm going to film something, and you get kind of really excited about it, and you might do it consistently for a couple weeks or even a month, and then it kind of dies out, and you know, it's just kind of random here and there. And that's kind of what my videos have been, except over the last year I've been doing something called SPI TV, where I do it every week now, and that's been better, and I've been seeing my subscriber numbers grow. But for those who are just starting out, like, what's the approach? We'll start with you, Nadine. What's the right approach when it comes to, okay, I'm going to choose YouTube, I'm going to focus on it, it's going to be that sort of one platform I'm going to focus on right now. What's the best approach to really make it work? And also, what are some of the big mistakes that people are making as they're getting into it?
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the biggest things is you need to find a voice. A lot of people, when you're just starting into YouTube, you're going to look at the successful people. You're going to look at people that are doing well on the platform. That's like any industry that when you're first jumping into it, it's really hard to compare yourself to those people. Obviously those people started at zero, and a lot of people forget that those people also started at zero. But what is going to propel you, especially in YouTube landscape nowadays, is what are you passionate about? Why are you going onto the platform? What do you want to create, and what do you want to put out there in the world? If you don't know that answer yet, you got to take some time and figure it out. That might mean experimenting. I experimented a lot when I first started my channel. Now that's statistically, like with the YouTube algorithm, that's not the best. But if through that experimentation, you could figure out what your passion is and what it is that you want to create, and you know that, and you're like, wow, I can create this for the next X amount of years, or I know that I'm going to have so many ideas around this and it's going to inspire me, then it's worth that time to experiment. Mm-hmm. My biggest thing is, and through the experimentation, you should be focusing on what's a niche that you can kind of tap into. Niches are really, really big on YouTube, because there's so much out there right now. So it's figuring out, like, with both me and Kristen, we're in travel. We're experts in travel. We know everything about travel. There's certain things, once you've kind of honed in on your niche, you can expand beyond that. But you need to find something that you're passionate about. A lot of people, especially with females or males, if you're a female going into YouTube, people will tell you, okay, do beauty, do fashion. If you're a male, they'll go do gaming. Yes, those do really well on the platform. There are a couple different reasons why. One, they're popular topics. Two, they have a lot of watch time. And watch time, which we can talk about, is how you kind of game the algorithm in YouTube. It's how YouTube determines if your videos are worth viewing and worth, like, putting out to other people and pushing on their own on the YouTube platform.
Awesome.
So yeah, finding those kind of experiment a bit and then find your niche and go from there.
When you started, did you always know you're going to be doing, like, travel? And then what was your niche within the travel space that you found?
Oh gosh. When I started, I did with comedy. I did sketch comedy because that's what I did when I was younger. I was like little skits here and there. They're really embarrassing skits. We should never, ever.
They're pretty
them.
Awesome.
All right. We'll link to them in the show notes for everybody. That's what we'll do.
So I did that. And then I started doing gaming a bit because I was like, hey, I like video games. This is pretty fun. And then I found travel after. Oh, and then I did musical parody. And then I found travel. And once I found travel, I was like, this is it. This is what I love. This is my passion. Everything else, they were fun to create. But I'm like, this is what I want to do with my life. And so it's a little bit of a progression there, but I eventually did get to travel.
Yeah, I love that because you had mentioned finding your voice, and there's a very obvious path there that took you in many different spots to find that voice. So I think the big lesson there is, you know, it's going to take time, but you have to put yourself out there and give it a shot.
And for me, travel was a passion. I was traveling before I was making YouTube videos. So I kind of thought, why not do that? Because mm-hmm. I was going to school for film and making videos already. So I kind of had my passion already and brought it onto YouTube and instead of being on YouTube and then finding my passion afterwards.
Great. And then Kristen, for somebody who's just starting out, if they're like, okay, I'm going to do YouTube, I'm going to create videos, it's going to be on this particular topic, this is something I'm interested in or I feel I could be very interested in for a long time. What's the plan? Is it just kind of a fly by the seat of your pants, make a video when you feel like it kind of thing? Or what's the right consistency? How far into the future do you plan ahead? Can you speak on that a little bit?
I find that uploading a video once a week, at least once a week, is the way to go. If you upload even twice a month, I would say is not enough. Personally, I would say at least once a week, because if not, you kind of go like people will forget. They forget you're there and they forget you're making content. So being regular, being consistent, even having a specific day of the week, although I've kind of played around with that. But I've been sticking to 2 days a week. I upload at the same time every on those 2 days. And I find that has really worked with my views and engagement because it's like a TV show. If I want to go watch a TV show, I know exactly what day of the week it's on. I know what time. So I know I can tune in and it will be on. And that's how that's what viewers want for your YouTube viewers. They want to know that they can come to your channel and expect new content. And mm-hmm. I think being consistent with it, attracts more people. I mean, you have more videos going around, so more people can find you, but it also lets people know that you're going to continue creating content and continue creating a community.
Love it. I think what we're doing here is, as we're talking, I feel like we're starting with, okay, the planning and the getting over the mindset stuff and putting yourself out there. And I want to kind of move people forward into, okay, let's talk about video production. And then later in the show, we'll get to, you know, getting viewers and marketing and maybe some of the algorithmic kind of things you were talking about. So let's keep going here. So we have a niche now that we're interested in. We're going to post things on YouTube and we're going to be consistent with those videos maybe twice a week, if possible. How long, and Kristen, we'll start with you on this one again to keep going on that. How long should those videos be?
For me personally, that's a tough question, and I've been playing around with it. I find that when I'm doing like vlog style videos, which are kind of like more raw, uncut, way more detail, getting, being way more connected on a specific topic and connected with my audience. People love long videos. So something that's like 10 to 15 minutes, I actually get a lot of traction and people watch all the way through.
And that's a vlog, you said, meaning like you're, it's face to camera and it's just you talking about something. It's not like a highly produced thing.
Yeah. And I think it's because it makes the viewers feel like they're your friend and they're hanging out with you and they want to keep hanging out with you. So the longer the videos are, they're going to keep watching. And something that's more informative, more like a travel guide or travel tips, I find that my videos that are between like 5 and 7 minutes, that's perfect because people are coming on there for information and their intention is after about 5 to 7 minutes, between 5 to 7 minutes, it's gone. They want to click on something else.
The reason it's such a hard question is because it keeps changing. YouTube keeps changing the algorithm. Before, YouTube heavily favored shorter videos. There's a reason why a lot of ad companies, marketing companies, they're like 2 to 3 minutes. They were like, this is our prime YouTube online space. It has changed. Right now, this has been collaborated by a lot of different sources, a lot of YouTubers. There have been studies on it. Right now, the prime time is 10 minutes. You want to be just over 10 minutes. Anything longer than that is great as well. Then it just depends on the content of the video, but you want to get over 10 minutes because of the way that the YouTube algorithm is worked at. And there are studies that I can link you to about this and how much it increases your further views. This is because it increases, there's two reasons. One is because that's when the second ad break comes in. So YouTube can put a second ad on your video, which means
YouTube likes that.
YouTube likes that because it makes YouTube more money, which makes you more money as well. So they want to promote a video that can serve two ads versus a video that can serve them one ad. And also it increases your watch time. 70-minute videos. You wouldn't think that like a 60-minute video, 70-minute video, 40-minute video would get a lot of views, but they do. One, they have to be an engaging video at the beginning. Don't just post a 70-minute video of painting a wall, unless it's a really cool painting. That could actually work, but it needs to have some sort of engagement in it. But if you can keep the viewer's eye on your video for the long, if just that one video, if you can get them watching YouTube for a long period of time and then moving maybe even onto other videos, YouTube is going to highly reward that video and it's going to push it up because they see that, wow, people are watching this. I can serve more ads. This is generating a lot of thing. And that's why YouTube really heavily favors watch time, which is a mixture of your views, your view duration, your session. So like when someone clicks into YouTube, depending on what video they click into YouTube, one, you want to make it your video. That's the ideal situation is someone clicks onto YouTube through your video, and then that's the start of their session. Now, how long they stay on YouTube. So say if they continue watching more of your videos, that's great. That's even more perfect. It'll promote all your videos. But even if they go and watch other people's videos when they're on YouTube, your video brought them to the platform. Your video is allowed them to watch more time. So YouTube's going to heavily reward that video because they know that, hey, that video is bringing more people onto YouTube. So they're going to watch more stuff. We can serve them more ads. We can make more money.
Got it. And I do want to talk more about the business stuff and the money that's involved and what's possible down the road. But I think, Nadine, let's keep talking about content and keeping people engaged while watching. I think, you know, a lesson that I know from email is that the subject line, the purpose of the subject line is so that they open the email, and the purpose of the first sentence is so they read the second sentence, and so on and so forth. And so in a video, what are some techniques and tricks and tactics we can use to keep people watching, to really get them to not only just start watching the video, but keep watching that video?
First thing is title and thumbnail. You should be spending just as much time on your title and thumbnail as you are on your video. Well, maybe not quite as much if it's a really long video.
Unless it's a 70-minute video, right?
Yeah. But people really highly overlook the title and thumbnail. That is your marketing. That is it. That is like all you got to market your video on the platform, because you don't see the description when it's in the search pages. You only really see the description if they're on your channel itself or if it's in a playlist. Then you can kind of see the description of a video. Description is important too. The reason being is because of keywords. So that kind of helps YouTube figure out where your video, who would be searching for your video. But title and thumbnail, very important to keep people watching.
Okay.
The next thing
But before you move on, I want to dig a little bit deeper on that. So for the thumbnail, what are maybe a couple important elements to have on that?
It needs to be bright. It needs to be, I like to call it intriguing. You know, those like weird faces that people do. It doesn't, you don't have to put a face on it, but people attract. There's just something about somebody else. I don't know what it is.
Well, it's YouTube. It's personal too, right? So they want to see a personality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So people generally do really well. So having a person in a thumbnail, having some sort of element of intrigue of like, why is that person doing that? Like, oh, they're making a funny face. That's why you see a lot of like funny faced thumbnails, because they're like, it's just trying to entice you to click, right? All the mm-hmm. the thumbnail and the title is trying to entice you to click. If your picture is just kind of, it could be pretty, it can be a beautiful picture. I mean, with travel, it's a little bit different because you have landscapes and you do have amazing things that you can showcase. But mm-hmm. if you just have like a pretty, if you have like a kind of a simple photo, what's bringing me in as a viewer? Why am I going to want to click on that? I see a pretty photo and go, okay. But if I see something that's a little bit like weird, or like there's a bit of movement or a little bit of like facial, like I'm in mid sentence, I'm like, huh. What's this? Just that. All you need is that like little huh, and you get someone to click.
Is it good to have text on a thumbnail?
I use text on a lot of my thumbnails.
Mm-hmm.
I especially think it's good if it's like for my travel tips and such. But if it's like an actual vlog, I like just like Nadine was saying, something bright, beautiful, captivating. Like someone, you want someone to like, if they're scrolling through YouTube, all their subscriptions, your photo is going to pop. And the way that it can do that is it's going to be a beautiful photo. It's going to be bright. Again, if it's your face, that's great too, because when it comes to YouTube, it's about you. It's about personality. So someone will scroll down, they'll see your face and be like, oh, Kristen, Nadine uploaded a new photo, video. So, when it comes to, I think that's really important, but also including text for some, I don't know, Nadine, would you say, like, does it work for you for text? Have you experimented with that?
Yeah, I have. It really depends on the video, to be honest.
Yeah.
If you're doing a more informative video, text really works. If it's something that because it's like double marketing for your your title. So they can mm-hmm. see it just by seeing, just by looking through the video. If it's something that takes a little bit longer than a few words to say, I mean, you're not going to be putting a paragraph on your thumbnail.
So it
all depends. It all depends. There's no yes or no with regards to text. It really depends on what type of videos you're producing and whether you want to use that as a marketing tool to have on your thumbnail.
Got it.
I also wanted to just mention too, if you are going to use text in your thumbnail, what I tend to do, I don't use the same, like I don't put the exact title in my thumbnail. I'll take the keywords from that title and put that in my thumbnail, because that's what's going to grab my audience. And by there's a really awesome resource that actually Nadine shared with me called vidIQ, which tells you like the most popular tags. It could see, like, you can see their ratings, you can see what tags other YouTubers have been using who have like viral videos. So you can take those tags, and what that means is like the words that people are typing in YouTube that are the most popular, what people are searching for the most, and use those in your titles and in your thumbnails.
Love it. So many like little tactics and tricks here. And I'm sure you guys have just kind of picked these up over time. Plus, I love that you're learning from other people. You even mentioned that you've gotten a lot of these resources from each other and other people too. And mm-hmm. then there's, of course, the annual, I think it's annual, conference in Anaheim, VidCon. Mm-hmm. Do you guys attend that?
Yep. Yeah, yeah. We both speak at VidCon.
Oh, that's so cool.
It's a great, great, great conference.
And there's like 20,000 people there.
Oh yeah.
That's amazing. That's crazy. I'll have to, I'm in San Diego, so I got to head up there. Maybe I can see you guys next year.
Absolutely. You should come. You'll definitely see the power of YouTube and how it really affects people too. Cause there's so many people that come to these events, and that's just one of them. There are several.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. We'll make that happen for sure. Let's see, Nadine, let's keep talking about the engagement. So what, like during your video or as you're recording, what are some things you can do to just make sure people keep watching?
Well, after we've gotten someone to click, we need to get them to stay. It's all great having a good thumbnail and title, but if they click onto the video and they get something completely different, one, that's just misleading and you don't want to do that because they're going to click away and that's going to negatively impact you. So two, we need to get them to stay. They've clicked, so far so good. We need to get them to stay. So we want something that's engaging, really quickly at the beginning. So within the first 30 seconds, that's kind of your make or break of when people are, I mean, some people are less realistically, you could say that in the first 15, 10 seconds, people are going to either stick around or they're going to leave that video. But I like to say in the first 30 seconds, that is your time to kind of sell the video, like show them what this video is going to bring to them, why they should keep watching. You can do that by having some sort of like funny bit at the beginning, some sort of really beautiful, gorgeous montage at the beginning, some sort of informative thing of like, hey, today I'm going to talk about this and we're going to learn all about this in this video. Can't wait to get started sort of thing. You need to tell them what they're going to expect. Give them a little teaser of, or an intrigue of what they're going to expect for the rest of the video. And then we can kind of, so we want to start high. And then if you have like a more of a, like if you're creating a longer video, intrigue, gotta have like a really good bit at the beginning. Keep them there. Then you can have more of the slower bits in the middle, and then you want to end on a really good bit because you want them to be like, wow, that was so awesome. I want to watch another video from Nadine. I want to watch another video from Kristen. So Great. It's kind of like, yeah, a little bit of a W. Or no, a U, not a W. It can be a W as well, though.
Kristen, can you talk a little bit more about that in terms of the call to actions, like getting people to continue that conversation with you on another video or, I don't know, subscribe or you know, all those kinds of things? Those are obviously very important. How do you best deliver call to actions and get people to take action from the video that they watched?
I have been experimenting a little bit more with that because typically I put a call to action or I do a call to action at the end of my video mm-hmm. in two different ways. So I'll tell people, subscribe, leave a comment below. People like to be told, even though like, even if they've been watching your videos for a while, it's like, it's still good to remind them to, hey, I'd love for you to comment below. And even asking them a question, like leaving people with a question that they can answer, mm-hmm. makes them feel like they're involved with the video and more involved with the community of your channel. So saying, telling them to subscribe, telling them to leave a comment below and asking them a question to kind of kickstart that conversation. Mm-hmm. And then also end cards. And YouTube just implemented a new end card system. Before I would actually like, I added an end card in my editing process, like, and I would edit or I would add videos for people to click on in that, in like Final Cut, which is what I use. But now YouTube has made it easier, especially because everyone is watching videos on their phones or their tablets. So you can actually add an end card and add videos, like past videos, and also like a link to, for people to subscribe to you or even to your website. On the end card so that people can click, whether they're on their computer, on their phones, and it will continue having them watch your like another video or another playlist of videos, which is also very important. Get making playlists of your mm-hmm. videos. So you can put like, let's say 10 videos in one playlist and the videos will play back to back to back. And that gets people continuing to watch your content. And yeah. Lately, I've also been adding a call to action at the beginning. So telling people like, thanks for watching. If you haven't subscribed yet, be sure to do so. And let's get going with this video kind of thing.
Awesome.
So that's verbal. There's verbal call to actions. And there's also nonverbal call to action. So Kristen was mentioning playlists, putting your videos in playlists. Related videos and playlists are really, really important. So you can do a verbal call to action or you can end it abruptly. I've been experimenting with ending abruptly, which is like, boom, video ends. The reason is that because YouTube will populate the next screen. If your video is in a playlist, it'll play the next video on that playlist. So that's a chance for you to manually curate it. And it just pops up automatically. Like there's an autoplay function. So just boom, you're right into the next video without even knowing. And like, if you have that good grab at the beginning, remember those first 30 seconds, mm-hmm. then people are going to, hey, I'm going to watch this video as well. The other thing is if you tag your videos right and include yourself in the tags, then your videos will pop up in the related things. So you'll get a whole screen of related videos. And if those are also your videos, then people will click on those and they can kind of continue on watching. Love it. That's another way.
Love it. Okay, so we got our videos recorded. We got great content. We have call to actions in there and we've set it up so that people will continually watch all the way through. We're getting people to engage in the comments, which I always love doing that because, you know, when people kind of respond and get involved, they're more likely to just feel like a part of the community, which is amazing. So our video's out there. We upload it. And then we have zero views because we just uploaded it. How, if we don't have any subscribers, Kristen, we'll start with you on this one. If we're just getting started, I mean, nobody knows about our videos. So how do we even, like get viewers, I guess?
Well, let me go back to like 5 years ago when I started. I would make the videos and just share them with my family and friends, who would then share them with their family and friends. You want to get on all the social media platforms. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know it's, there's a lot and there's always a new one coming out, but it's good to at least sign up and have your name for each platform that comes out, and find the ones that work best for you by experimenting, and then like promote your video on there in any way that you can.
Which ones work best for you?
Instagram works great for me. And now the video option as well on Instagram has been awesome. Mm-hmm. And the traction has been great. Snapchat is really great and getting people to head on over to watch your video. And also having my blog has been really great too. And just embedding the video on like in a blog post.
To get yeah. I second that.
Yeah. It's because like Instagram, I have a different Snapchat audience on there. Yeah. So I think that, first of all, and then once you get to learn, as we've been talking about, like tags and everything, tags are so important, and finding the keywords, and also like in the description of your video too, it's good to include those keywords in the first like sentence of that description that like that talks about what your video is going to be about. And also closed captioning. If you can do closed captioning and like do a transcript for your video, that also helps rank you in Google and on YouTube. So any way that you can add, like you can, if you can do all of these things, your video is going to be easier to find. So eventually people will find you.
And that's also related to, you know, the fact that YouTube is a search engine and people are looking for that information. They're typing in keywords. And if you have those keywords in your video, in your closed caption, in your description, you know, it's obvious that it's going to be more likely that it's going to show up, because YouTube wants to show people videos that relate to their search queries, right?
Exactly.
Closed captioning is a great idea. And I think a lot of people know they should do it, but just don't do it because they don't know how. I'd love for you to share how you do that, or if you have a VA or something. But I have a tool that I use called rev.com, which can actually integrate with your YouTube channel, so that automatically every time you come out with a video, a human being at Rev will get a link to that video and then will create a transcript for it and then just deliver it to you. So I don't know if you guys...
I got to write that one down.
Yeah, rev.com. It's pretty cool, because I've been doing that with my videos, because we had a transcriptionist who was a VA who then left, and we were having trouble finding one. And Caleb, my videographer, was like, dude, you got to hook it up to Rev. It'll be done automatically for you. And it's cool, because it just happens as you upload videos. But I don't know if there's a penalty, because I'm not uploading the video with the closed caption. I'm adding the closed caption in after. I don't know if that's a problem or not. But
I mean, as far as I know, YouTube doesn't penalize adding a closed caption in later. Mm-hmm. Actually, YouTube has increased their closed caption abilities. There's a couple things that they've done. First off, I'll just touch quickly that my VA is my mom.
Oh, no way. That's cool.
She loves it. It's like a chance for her to watch my videos, and she totally doesn't mind it at all. It's like, great.
That's cool.
But YouTube has a system now. So there's a couple different things that they do is they allow you to, which they didn't do before, they allow you to translate the title and the description in another language too. So it pops up into your video itself will pop up with the translated title and description in the other countries, or like this is more for native different languages. So like if you're doing Germany, you can translate your title and description to German, and then that video will circulate on the German YouTube site, the native German YouTube site, more, because it's already been translated. So that's a good way to get an international audience. Of course, if you're going to do that, it's good to have German subtitles. YouTube added in an offering for, they have a subtitle program itself. I don't personally use it, but another thing that I have done before, and I know other creators do, is there's an option when you upload your video to select allow community subtitles and
I love that.
And contributions. Huh. So if you have community members, some creators will verbally ask in videos, hey guys, I'm looking for subtitle people. You can select that button and people can just automatically submit their captions, their subtitles, either it'd be part of a video, a whole video, etc. And then you can approve.
Yeah. And then people do it. They love it. Like, especially like I've had tons of people in my community just upload, transcribe in all these different languages. And I'm always so impressed that they take the time to do it and they really enjoy it. They love being able to do that. for myself and for other people. It's pretty nice.
That's cool. It seems like a win for everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they get credit for it too. So they're like, they can see their name. They're like, oh, I've contributed. So.
Oh, that's awesome. That's cool. So as we're closing in on this sort of path or journey that we've been on together, and ladies, I want to thank you again for your time here. I want to talk about the business side of YouTube. And of course, people don't want to do, well, a lot of people do want to do this just because they love doing it and probably wouldn't care if there was any money on the other end or not. But I know a lot of people also don't want to do it unless they know that there's some, you know, sort of reward on the other end. And I want you to do each kind of talk about how your business in particular runs in conjunction with YouTube. Is it just simply ad dollars? Are you selling products on top of that? And you know, is there anything else that I should be touching on? So Nadine, why don't we start with you in terms of the business side of YouTube? What does that look like? And then also, like, what could one expect if they were starting today? What is realistic?
Yeah, so the business side of YouTube has exploded in the last, I would say, solid 3 years. Since 2013 is really when I think a lot of ad industries, a lot of big players came in and were like, okay, we accept, we commit, we are putting a lot of money and time and effort into this. This is where the future is. Before, they were kind of tickering and being like, I don't know, this YouTube thing, this online video thing. And what I mean by that is in 2013, that's when a lot of the big money came in. Now, speaking for myself, I would say at least 80% of my income comes from sponsored content or branded content. So that's dealing with, and so that's dealing with brands and companies.
So how do you work with them? Like, what do those deals look like?
Each of them are very, so it could be going through a company directly, it could be going through a PR person, but there are a couple different ways that you do it. It's a term of sponsor. Okay, we'll use the term sponsor content because that's what they call it. It's, I'm going to create a piece of content for my channel and I'm going to feature either this product or this brand in some sort of way or another in this video. It could be as simple as a product placement. So if I'm doing an ad for a coffee or like a soda or something, it could be like, hey, this is, I'm drinking this soda, or like I'm using this soda. That's maybe not a great example, but that's one way. Another way is creating a content around it. Like, both Kristen and I are travel vloggers. So we work with hotels or airlines or destinations. So travel boards. So if I'm going to, I was just recently in Nova Scotia up in Canada, and I created a bunch of videos around Nova Scotia, showcasing all the things there is to do and the beauty of it. And that is a type of sponsored content because Nova Scotia sponsored those videos. Cool. And the same thing with like airlines, et cetera. I'll be like, I'm taking this airline and I'm showing you my experience on this airline as I go to this destination. So those are more integrated, more creative types of content. And those all vary in the different things. And those are paid content that's been created because they're using my network, they're using my resources, and they're using my creativity to come up with this piece of content that's a type of advertisement, but it's not like an advertisement. It's me showing you what this service or experience is like, and then you see it through me.
On those videos, do you enable the sort of AdSense sort of overlay ads as well? So you're kind of getting double, or are you just focusing on the company that you are sort of highlighting in that video?
I focus on the company. This is a contested little issue that you brought up. I always turn off ads whenever I do a sponsor content because I never want to see, because the way that the YouTube algorithm works is if I'm like, oh, I'm working with an airline. If there's an airline another airline company that's bought ad space on YouTube, then their ads are going to appear on my video. And that's not really good because that's a conflict. Like, that doesn't look good from a branding perspective, or even just me as a creator. It's just a mixed messaging perspective. So I always turn off ads. I know other creators don't. I know in certain contracts that you sign with the company, so if you're doing sponsored or branded content, they'll specifically list out must turn off all ads. I always turn off ads because I don't like that. I never want to see, if someone's sponsoring, paying me to create a piece of content on my channel, I don't need to run ads on it as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. And Kristen, you said that these sponsor sort of relationships are a primary way that you generate an income as well. Is that true?
Yeah, that's true. I'd say about 80% as well. I think Nadine and I basically make our money the exact same ways. Yeah, it's sponsored deals, tourism boards. I do the same thing with my videos. If I'm uploading a video that's sponsored, I turn off the monetization. Mm-hmm. And I also incorporate not just videos, but I have like a multimedia package that I offer to brands and tourism boards. So I do blog posts and then social media as well.
Same, yeah, same, it's like here.
A whole package. But yeah, it's a whole multimedia package. So that's cool. Where the income comes from.
And then the question for you, Kristen, now is, if I'm just getting started with my YouTube channel, can I go to a company or a board of some sort, for example, like you guys have, and say, hey, I have the YouTube channel, let's work together? Or is it something where you have to grow so big that you kind of then wait for them to come to you? At what point could one start actually doing that?
I have a couple different answers to this.
Okay.
Because I wouldn't just go with one video on your YouTube channel, even no matter how amazing it is. I wouldn't just have that and go to a company and say, hey, like, I want to, like, pay me to travel, because it's going to be, you're most likely they're going to say no, because why would they say yes? Like, you have to create a portfolio. You have to build a portfolio. And that doesn't mean you have to have 100,000 subscribers in order to work with a company or get paid to travel. But you have to have content, and you have to have something that brand is going to be like, yes, they have that to offer me. That is why I want to work with them. So that could be an audience. That can be like a lot of engagement. Or that could be, this person makes absolutely stunning videos, and this is what we want right now for our campaign. So you don't have to have thousands of subscribers, but you do have to have the work. You have to have that portfolio.
Yeah, because there's two different things, right? So there's you as a network, as a distribution network, where you're utilizing your audience as a terms of, hey, you're going to, if you do a sponsored content, a branded deal with me, you're going to get this many eyeballs. And the other end is, if you do a brand or sponsored content, a product with me, you're going to get a good produced video. You don't need to have both. You definitely don't need to have a million subscribers, or like even a couple. You can do it with a couple hundred subscribers. If you have a great product, you can sell that product, because they still need that product. You can sell that to that company, that brand, and be like, hey, I'm just going to be a production company, and I'm going to work with you, and this is what I'm going to produce with you.
And the good thing is, if you have both, you have the audience and you have great content, and which will happen if you do have great content, you will get the audience. You can then offer more, so you can get paid more, and you can also create a better reputation for yourself.
And I'm sure as you grow, you have a little bit more leverage, and you get a little bit more say in terms of what goes in the contract and stuff like that. But I think the big lesson is, you know, it just takes time. So maybe in the beginning, it's truly focusing about building that audience, creating great content, and just being consistent.
Absolutely. You should be doing it because you're passionate and you love it, not because you want to make money. If you go into it thinking, I want to make millions of dollars, it's the wrong attitude, and you're not going to be successful. You have to do it because you want to, because you love it, because you would do it even if you weren't getting paid. That's how I believe. And the money will come.
I love it. And so Kristen from hopscotchtheglobe.com, and then Nadine from heynadine.com. HeyNadine. You guys are now, those are two separate websites, and you guys kind of, at what point did you connect in the life of your brands? And I'm curious to know how you guys gotten so close to a point now where you actually created a product together. Like, how did that relationship start between both of you?
It was actually an email from Kristen. It was an email from Kristen being like, hey, I'm Kristen. You know, I have a blog as well. You know, if you ever want to collaborate or do something. Collaboration, we didn't really touch on that, but it's a huge way to gain other viewers to your channel, is working with other content creators that are in your space or in other spaces, because you can share audiences. You're introducing, it's like a friend's recommendation. You're introducing someone else to the people that watch you. And you're like, hey, this person's a cool person. We create videos together. So she just reached out through email, and we're like, hey, yeah. I'm like, I love your stuff, Kristen. This is awesome. So we kind of just kept back and forth. And then we met in Toronto at a travel conference. And we decided to go on a trip together. And now we decided to create a product together. So that's the evolution of our friendship.
That's so cool.
I was just going to say, our product, it's a course. It's an online course called The Art of Travel Vlogging. And basically, this whole podcast is like a little taste of what it's like to be a travel vlogger, and how to be successful at travel vlogging. And our course goes into much more detail at how to be successful in this business, and based on mine and Nadine's personal experience over the last 6-7 years all of our ups and downs, and like we basically share everything that's worked for us to kickstart someone who really wants to do travel vlogging, to kickstart mm-hmm. their career.
So cool. Where can people go get that course? I'm not an affiliate for those of you listening, by the way, and I haven't checked it out yet. So where can people check it out?
Superstarblogging.com.
Sweet. Easy enough. Superstarblogging.com. And if I can squeeze one more tip from you, mm-hmm. if that's cool. Nadine, you had mentioned collaborations, and I'm curious, what are a few ways that you both have been able to collaborate and grow your audiences together? We'll get maybe one answer from both of you. So we'll start with mm-hmm. Nadine.
Well, the best way of collaborating is actually having the person with you and doing a dual collaboration. So it's where you're going to create a piece of content on your channel and a piece of content on their channel, and you are going to have call to actions to cross promote. And hey, and so you're going to create an awesome piece of content for your channel and be like, hey, if you want to see more, we created another video. So you're telling your audience, hey, it's over on that channel. Go check it out. I'm going to be there. So you know you're going to see a familiar face. It's not going to be totally random. And it's also a really good piece of content. And if they like your stuff, you know, they're going to go over and check out your collaborator's stuff, and they'll do the same for you. And that's a great way to share audiences. It's the number one way to grow without going viral or gaming systems.
Mm-hmm. I love that idea. And I know it happens in the YouTube space. For some mm-hmm. reason, it doesn't happen as much in the podcasting world or the blogging world. It's just you don't see sort of collaborations like that. And I think even if you're listening to this and you're like, oh, I'm not ready for YouTube, well, you could do the same thing with whatever platforms you are on now. Mm-hmm. So keep that in mind. Mm-hmm. So to finish up, Kristen, something on collaboration to help the audience out.
Collaboration is, I think, the number one way to grow on YouTube. I think... And don't be scared. I should say this, actually. If you are someone who has, let's say, 10,000 subscribers and you want to approach someone who has 100,000, they do travel. So it wouldn't be like random, like I'm doing gaming and they're doing travel, but they have a lot more subscribers. So it can be a little bit intimidating. Don't feel like you can't reach out to them. If you have a great idea that's going to intrigue them, like tell them what you want to do. Like, I want to collaborate with you. This is what I think of you. And this is why I want to collaborate. And this is what I want to do. Like, propose a really unique, interesting idea that's going to make them want to say yes. Doesn't matter how many subscribers you have.
And show them that you're going to do the work too, because yes. you have to make it as easy. Like, why would they want to subscribe? If you're a bigger channel and a smaller channel is coming to you, you have to look, why am I going to want to subscribe? Why do I want to collaborate? What am I getting out of it? Because to make a collaboration successful, both parties have to have mutual beneficial results. So at the bigger channel, you go, well, what am I going to get out of it? Well, that smaller channel might have resources that you don't have. They mm-hmm. might have connections you don't have. They could provide an additional service such as like, hey, you know what? I'm going to edit the videos for you. It'll be so simple. As a smaller channel, if you can provide that to a larger channel, they're going to be more in, it's more likely that they might say yes to you. And that will be really helpful if you do get a larger channel, because that's a great way to boost your numbers if you're smaller and you're just growing.
We just did that actually in Germany. I put together what we called a collabcation, where we had a bunch of different video creators with different numbers and different like skills to bring to the table. We all just kind of collaborated together in Germany, creating videos or talking about different things like marketing or Instagram, whatever someone was good at and they could offer you. And then you offer something in return. And it was really great.
That's so cool. Ladies, thank you so much for your time today. I know I kept it kind of over the time I said I was going to have you for the beginning, but you guys were just dropping so many amazing value bombs here. And I want to thank you so much for your time. We'll link to all your stuff and everything we mentioned in the show notes. And I'm sure people are going to start following you and loving what you do. So again, Kristen and Nadine, thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate you so, so much.
Of course, thanks for having us.
All right. I hope you guys enjoyed that episode with Kristen Sarah again from hopscotchtheglobe.com and also Nadine Sakura from heynadine.com. All the links and stuff, all the resources we mentioned, there's quite a few. You can find them at smartpassiveincome.com/session259. As always, I'd also like to thank GoDaddy for sponsoring today's episode. You know, they have a mission to give the tools and the insights and the people required to help people like us who are building independent ventures to transform our ideas and personal initiatives into success. They've helped me for several years with registering domain names at a super cheap price. They have over 62 million domain names registered, and you know, just about 61 million are mine. No, I'm just kidding, but I do have a lot registered through them for websites that I have, but also I just have them for forwarding through, you know, for things like willitflybook.com or emailthesmartway.com or ebooksthesmartway.com. Those are all registered through GoDaddy so that I can forward to different parts of my site. So it's easier for me to share, easier for you to remember, all those kinds of things. And there's over 13 million customers, so you're obviously in good hands. So right now, my listeners can get a special discount on a GoDaddy domain. Just use the code SMART30 at checkout to get 30% off new purchases. That's GoDaddy.com, code SMART30 for 30% off for most things. And then finally, once again, just best of luck to you and your YouTube channel. If you want to check mine out, you can go to youtube.com/smartpassiveincome. Currently, at the time of this recording, there's about 70,000 subscribers. So I'm interested to see how it grows and how it goes into the future. There's going to be a lot more content uploaded there too, thanks to some of the tips learned here on this episode. And again, the show notes are available at smartpassiveincome.com/session259. Cheers. I appreciate you, and I look forward to serving you in next week's episode. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Smart Passive Income Podcast at www.smartpassiveincome.com.
Entrepreneurs, what is the smart way to save when your growing business takes you on the road? Whether you're going to events or conventions or you're speaking somewhere, no matter what it is, you need to sign up for a free membership with Hertz Business Rewards. Yep, Hertz Rental Car created a program to help small and mid-sized businesses save money. Work trips, client meetings, industry conferences. With Hertz Business Rewards, you save at least 20% every time you rent a car. And you'll save on more than just the daily rate. Members earn credits redeemable toward free rental days, and it's also free to add an additional driver if any additional coworkers come along. And for those Gen Z entrepreneurs out there, no young renter fees. Plus, sign up for Hertz Business Rewards today and earn 3x credit during your first 90 days. These benefits add up to big savings that stack more dollars in your wallet. Join for free at hertz.com/businessrewards. Applies to base rate, taxes, fees, and options excluded. Additional terms and exclusions apply. Visit hertz.com/businessrewards to learn more. Hey, if you're looking for a new podcast to add to your rotation, I've got one for you. It's called Dirty Money, and it's like a hybrid between a true crime and a business podcast. So hosts Jonathan Small and Dan Bova tell the tales of legendary scammers, con artists, and barely legal lowlifes who stop at nothing to rake in millions. Recent episodes include the man who looted $100 million from his own company. Crazy. Give it a listen. Head on over to Dirty Money right now on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, or Stitcher.